Good morning. The first and only case on the docket today is United States versus Chikaka. Are the parties ready? Okay, we'll hear first from the appellant.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Lieutenant Ottenwess. I represent Staff Sergeant Chikaka. Chief Judge Roman, with the court's permission, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, please.
Granted.
Thank you, Your Honor. The NMCCA effectively buried their heads in the sand and relegated overwhelming evidence of unlawful command influence into a footnote in dismissing Staff Sergeant Chikaka's claims.
Well, he got more than a footnote. He got half his sentence peeled off.
He got half his sentence peeled off,
Your Honor. That's meaningful relief, isn't it?
It's meaningful relief, but not in the context of unlawful command influence,
well,
Your Honor.
Well, I mean, you're getting a... Okay, you want to look the horse in the map. The five-year horse isn't good enough. It's got to be a five-year UCI horse.
Well, it's not sentencing relief that we're seeking in this case, Your Honor. Staff Sergeant
I know what you're asking for, but you got substantial relief. And what you seem to be saying is, well, you got it for the wrong reason. Or is that what you're saying?
We're not saying that, Your Honor. What we're saying here is that Staff Sergeant Chikaka was denied a fair trial. So sentencing relief, while obviously he's very grateful for that, does not cure the wrong that happened in this case.
That does not necessarily cure the wrong.
Correct, Your Honor.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
Now, the evidence of UCI in this case was pervasive, and it trickled down from the very peak of the Marine Corps all the way down to Staff Sergeant Chikaka's immediate commanding officer. Here, the prosecution, they attempted to inject UCI into the proceedings in three ways. First was the testimony of Major McCutcheon. He was Staff Sergeant Chikaka's immediate commanding officer. He testified as to the importance of adjudging a harsh sentence, but he did so in a way that reflected the guidance of Colonel Bauer's Operation Restore Vigilance campaign plan, and that guidance said that it was to operationalize the guidance of the Commandant, which we all know to refer to the Heritage Brief.
Yeah, what on earth does that piece of jargon mean? We're operationalizing the Commandant's whatever it is. I mean, I read that and I said, number one, what a horrible expression. And number two, what's it mean?
Well, certainly there is a lack of clarity there, Your Honor.
But, yeah.
But taken in context, it really reflects the importance of what the Commandant said and to remind the members of the 6th Marine Corps Recruit District of what the Commandant said and to take those words very carefully and to use those moving forward, Your Honor.
Counsel, just what is the role of the Heritage Brief in this case? It wasn't referred to at trial at all. There were no objections based on it, but it seems that a large part of your argument is kind of trying to bootstrap that into this case.
Absolutely, Your Honor. Well, the Heritage Brief really serves as the origin for all the subsequent unlawful command influence that happened in this case. So we have the Heritage Brief, we have the accompanying white letters that both preceded and followed the Heritage Brief at Paris Island.
Are we supposed to assume that every member of the Marine Corps is somehow automatically aware of the Heritage Brief and therefore that's a potential problem in every case?
It would be a fair assumption to make, Your Honor. Part of that has to do with the target audience of the Heritage Brief, which is every staff NCO and officer in the Marine Corps. Now, every single member of Staff Sergeant Chikaka's panel was a staff NCO or officer at the time of the Heritage Brief.
But we don't know if they heard it.
We have strong evidence that some members did, in fact, hear it, Your Honor. But even if we can't say for certain whether or not the members were in attendance at a speech or whether they had signed in on a roster saying that, you know, I was there, I was not there, that's not case dispositive here, Your Honor. We have a prosecution team that took the contents of the Heritage Brief, they took the ethos of the Heritage Brief, and they made a calculated attempt to inject it into the court-martial. They did that with the testimony of Major McCutcheon. They did that with both the testimony and the campaign plan of Colonel Bowers, and they did that with the photograph of the Commandant that they introduced at sentencing.
If this was so pervasive, why wasn't there any objections?
Well, certainly a trial counsel could have objected to it. I can't speak to why they chose not to object in this case. Perhaps they were asleep at the wheel. Perhaps they just didn't think it was an issue. I can't speak to that, Your Honor. But what we can address now is the fact that it did occur, and it certainly is problematic for Staff Sergeant Sakalka.
If you're the commandant of the Marine Corps and you are given by law the leadership of the Marine Corps, not as a combat, not as a sink, but as the commandant of the Marine Corps who's responsible for good order and discipline in the Marine Corps, and you see an obvious problem, maybe even an obvious problem that's limited, that's sort of concentrated in a certain area, like recruiting. What are you supposed to do without falling into the hole? What are you supposed to do to maintain good order and discipline without falling into the hole of UCI?
Well, there's certainly ways to emphasize the core values of the Marine Corps without speaking and crossing that line in a way that the common...
Well, I guess what I may be getting at is the problem Amos, or is the problem what happened below?
It's both, Your Honor. It's absolutely both.
Okay.
So
ahead.
It starts with Amos, and then you have the speech he gave, the accompanying white letters, and then you have a prosecution that, once the case was referred to court-martial, had two choices. They could first choose to separate the contents of the speech and all of the accompanying language within an attempt to give Staff Sergeant Chikaka a fair trial that didn't invoke the language of the heritage brief, that didn't invoke the wishes of the commandant. But what the prosecution did in this case is they chose option two, which was to bring in as many witnesses and evidence and photographs as possible.
Well, that's down here. That's the tactical level.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Not at the level of grand strategy that Amos is presumably working at.
Correct, Your Honor, but wouldn't have part two without part one originally happening here.
Counsel, would you concede that trial defense counsel has given you a challenge in regard to his failure to create a record here in regard to the heritage brief?
It certainly is an obstacle, Your Honor. It would have been better had they pursued the issues that stem from the brief in this case.
Then why don't we have a situation where we have in the past, as a court, stated that we can't simply have command influence, quote, in the air? Here, the record wasn't really set up by trial defense counsel having to do with the heritage brief.
Well, there is,
and we have to have, would you agree, not only this idea that the heritage brief was out there and that they knew about it, which isn't part of the record, also that it improperly influenced them as panel members.
Well, we don't need the heritage brief to, or we don't need solely the heritage brief to make the case of unlawful command influence in this case. First of all, this court can take judicial notice of historical facts, and we believe that the heritage brief would qualify that in this case. Secondly, the actions of the trial counsel, both in injecting the photograph, the testimony of Majors McCutcheon and Colonel Powers, are not reliant on the heritage brief to be UCI. Now, the heritage brief certainly helps make a stronger case here, but the actions alone, even without the heritage brief, are enough to constitute some evidence of unlawful command.
So what was the problem with the introduction of the photo of the commandant with the great-grandfather of one of the victims, separated from the heritage brief?
Well, Your Honor, it wasn't relevant in this case, and what it's likely to do is remind the members that this is what the commandant wants you to do in this case.
But how are you going from point A to point C in saying that the introduction of that photograph resulted in the panel members believing or understanding that the commandant would want a specific result in this particular case?
Well, in this case, Your Honor, I wouldn't say we're going from point A to point C. This case really stems from the fact that there is more than enough circumstantial evidence to show that at least two of the members were at Harris Island at the time the brief occurred, and the target audience of the brief itself and the accompanying white letters show that not only did the commandant, who set out on a worldwide tour to make sure every single Marine heard this case, was aware of the contents of the heritage brief, but the use of white letters in this case, as opposed to green letters, shows that once the letters were passed to the commandant or the commanders, they were supposed to make its way down to all the information.
Please explain the difference between a white letter and a green letter. And are there red letters and blue letters?
Now, certainly, we're digging into the Marine Corps correspondence manual in this case, which is not part of the record here, Your Honor.
Well, no, but, I mean, what's a white letter as opposed to a green letter since you brought up a green letter?
Absolutely, Your Honor. So the white letter refers to personal guidance from the commandant that is meant to be passed to all commanders and then intended for widest dissemination.
Okay.
Green letters are correspondence from the commandant that go to the commanders but are not meant for widest dissemination.
Counsel, is Major McCutcheon's testimony the best evidence you have of unlawful command influence, or do you point to some other evidence that is particularly damaging?
We would argue that that is the strongest evidence, Your Honor. You, not only does it invoke the heritage brief in its tone, but it also has the fact that one of the court-martial members, Staff Sergeant Padilla, knew Major McCutcheon and worked for the 6th Marine Corps recruit district as well. So there's the, beyond the contents of the heritage brief, you have a junior at the command who's hearing his superior officer tell him, this is the importance of adjudging a harsh sentence in this case. So that in itself would also constitute unlawful command influence, Your Honor.
So you're not quibbling with testimony about general deterrence. You're saying that the specific testimony of Major McCutcheon was the problem.
His testimony was certainly a problem, Your Honor, and there was sentencing relief granted as a part of that testimony as well. We believe, though, that the analysis of the NMCCA did not go far enough in considering the unlawful command influence of that testimony as well, and that's where we have problems with the decision of the lower court.
Counsel, could I ask a question? You know, we have two types of unlawful influence. We have the appearance of it and then actual unlawful influence. I couldn't tell from your brief whether you are arguing that there was sufficient evidence to reach the initial threshold, but what kind of unlawful influence? Are you alleging there was actual unlawful influence here, or are you alleging or accepting that there is just the appearance thereof?
I think that there's certainly an argument to be made here, Your Honor, that both could apply. I believe the invocation of the general tone of the heritage brief might fall into the realm of a parent, but when you have the testimony of Colonel Bowers, who is Master Sergeant Padilla's commanding officer, he reports to him, telling him that this conduct, in my opinion, is prejudicial to good order and discipline. You have him telling one of his subordinates the ultimate issue in this case, and he testified to the prejudicial nature, but he did so in a way that only invoked his personal opinion. The danger of that in this case is that the members will think, well, if Colonel Bowers thinks that this is prejudicial, then it must be. So that testimony certainly could cross the realm into actual unlawful command influence.
But why wasn't the curative instruction given by the military judge sufficient? How would you have improved the curative instruction given by the military judge?
I'm not sure there is a way to ultimately fix the curative instruction here, Your Honor. What we have
So essential in your view, it's structural error. As soon as you have a witness put on the witness stand who strays into forbidden territory, whoa, we have to start all over? Is that
certainly? I wouldn't say it's structural, Your Honor. I think in this case, though, the instruction that was provided here was the boilerplate. You will not consider things that you're not supposed to, and you'll use your own son's judgment to make a call here. I think that.
But wasn't it a little bit more tailored than that? Didn't the military judge pretty specifically say you cannot use that testimony for this reason?
There was that. Obviously, there was it. It was tailored in that way, Your Honor. But it didn't touch enough on the dangers of bringing in the heritage brief to this case. What you have here are competing interests. So, in assessing for unlawful command influence in this case, you have a members panel who is almost certainly aware of the words of a four-star general into how he wants sexual assault cases handled. Regardless of what type of instruction a military judge will give, that's not a four-star general here. There certainly is strong words coming from the leadership of the Marine Corps.
Well, then how can any trial for sexual assault be carried on in the Marine Corps?
Well, certainly through much stronger voir dire, Your Honor, and certainly not through of the methods that the trial counsel took in this case to bring in all of the elements that touched on what the Heritage brief said.
But it's the defense's responsibility to do that strenuous voir dire.
I would say it's the responsibility of all parties, Your Honor, including
I'd agree with that.
And in his case, both the I would say all three parties are responsible for allowing the court martial to happen in the way it did here, Your Honor.
And of course, the Heritage brief isn't the end. I mean, it's a brooding omnipresence in the sky, as Holmes would say, but it's not in evidence.
Correct, Your Honor.
Yeah. So we're down at the tactical level again.
Sure.
And okay. Go ahead.
So the NMCCA's error in this case was finding that there was no evidence that any of the members actually heard the Heritage brief. But this is belied by several factors. First, the target audience of the Heritage brief was for every single staff NCO and officer in the Marine Corps. Every member of Staff Sergeant Chidcock's panel was in that target group.
Counsel, couldn't that have been resolved on voir dire? I noticed in the record, it seems like what happened here is that the first member was asked the question, and I think that's initially when the notion of the Heritage brief arose, and that member was excused. But no one else was voir dired on the issue. So it seems like if, as you claim, that this is something that every Marine would have been exposed to, and I'm not disputing you, but it just seems odd that after that point, no one voir dired the remaining members, nor did the military judge go into an inquiry to each member to determine whether they had heard the brief or they were somehow affected or not affected by this. So is that kind of what you see as some of the problem here? When you said that it was the responsibility of all the parties here?
Correct, Your Honor.
And I guess it seems to me I would only partially agree with you there, because isn't the military judge supposed to be in charge of the trial?
Well, absolutely. The military judge, it is his or her courtroom. But certainly there's a responsibility on the defense counsel and the trial counsel as well to make sure that the record of trial...
Aren't the lawyers going to do whatever the judge lets them do?
Certainly, Your Honor. But the defense counsel and the trial counsel cannot, stand idly by while that happens here. So there is an obligation to make sure that fairness occurs in all courts, Marshal.
Okay. So you want to hammer everybody, right, at the trial. You think they all...
It's certainly not that we're seeking to hammer everybody, Your Honor. We're just seeking to give Staff Sergeant Chidcock a fair trial.
I understand.
Counsel, what weight, if any, should we give the Secretary of Navy's letter that was in the file along with the charge given to the members?
Well, certainly it is helpful here to show that there was some attempt made to cure the wrongs here, but it's not enough, Your Honor. Frankly, the prosecution's tactical efforts to inject the commandant into all phases of the court-martial started at the beginning of the trial when they attempted to introduce the photograph and went all the way until the end when they did put the photograph of the commandant into the deliberation room with all the members. Your Honor, I see that I'm out of time.
You can briefly conclude.
Thank you, Your Honor. The government injected unlawful command influence into the proceedings from the commandant all the way down to Staff Sergeant Chidcock as its immediate commanding officer. The widespread UCI denied him a fair trial, and this court should set aside and authorize a rehearing. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The court will now hear from the government.
Good morning, Chief Judge Erdman, and may it please the court, I am Lieutenant Commander Jeremy Brooks, and along with Mr. Brian Keller, I represent the United States. This court should affirm the findings and sentence for two reasons. First, there is no evidence on the record the members were exposed to the 2012 Heritage Brief or the white letters. And second, the other issues for which appellant complains were evidentiary or procedural issues which were dealt as such below.
Counsel, what was the purpose of introducing the photograph of the commandant with one of the victims' great-grandfathers?
Your Honor, was going to go show to the reason why the victim, who was a poolie, a recruiter, why she wanted to join the Marine Corps.
Because her great-grandfather met with the commandant?
Well, he'd been in the Marines, Your Honor, as well, and it was just going to show her.
But there were other photographs showing that, wasn't there?
There were several photographs. One of them involved the commandant.
Did the victim or did the victim testify on sentencing about her grandfather having been in the Marine Corps?
Yeah, I believe that's how the photo was admitted, Your Honor, through her.
How is the photo directly related to or resulting from the offenses that the accused committed?
It would be her how she held the Marine Corps, the esteem that she held the Marine Corps in, Your Honor. She had a very high opinion of the Marine Corps prior to the appellant's actions against her.
Does the government agree with the CCA that there were a number of problems with this case?
Yes, Your Honor. There were some evidentiary issues, particularly regards to the improper sentencing evidence under 1001B from Major McCutcheon, which was dealt with at the lower court as improper sentencing evidence, not as UCI. At trial, it was, you know, UCI was never raised, and with regard to...
They don't have to raise it.
No, Your Honor.
No, they don't. So you keep pounding on this in your brief. Well, this wasn't raised. Well, this wasn't raised. This wasn't raised. It doesn't have to be raised. UCI can be raised at any point, at any time.
Yes,
does the government agree with that?
Yes.
Okay, then why did you keep harping on it in your brief?
Well, at the lower court, dealt with that testimony from Major McCutcheon as 1001B testimony.
It was totally improper under Ort and Ort's progeny, absolutely.
Yes, Your Honor. This court reassessed the sentence based on
right.
as this court has done in a number of other cases with a superior testifying, Pearson, Horner, Cherry, Gordon, all of which were cited by the lower court.
What do we do about the CCA's language that they acknowledge the taint of unfair command influence in several instances, including the testimony about the sentence?
Yeah, I guess that would probably be the way the appellant has framed this issue is that the Heritage brief permeated through all of these and made each one of these as unlawful command influence, but there was no indication that there's nothing in the record that the Heritage brief was ever discussed. The appellant only asked this court to speculate that.
Well, no, I'm talking about what the CCA said about the hint and the taint of UCI in some of these proceedings.
I'm sorry, do you have a cite for that, Your Honor? Or I remember they said no in the footnote. They found no. They had raised the issue, but he'd not shown some evidence.
Let's see. Well, I've got JA 16, JA 12, that I read to be that the CCA acknowledged that there was a taint of unlawful command influence. JA 16, testimony about the sentence can implicate undue influence from the CCA.
I'm sorry. I believe those were some of the cites to the case law under the 1001B evidence, Your Honor. As I mentioned earlier, that would be the Pearson Horner line of cases cited. In each one of those cases, this court, when addressing a 1001B sentencing testimony similar to this that's alleged to be erroneous here, they've decided on 1001B grounds and not engaged in the apparent UCI analysis. And that's what the lower court did here, Your Honor.
Well, the government put in a bunch of stuff supposedly to show that the accused knew what was inappropriate and to give context. He's charged with violation of a lawful general order or regulation. You don't have to show knowledge. What's this in there for other than to show he's a bad guy?
Well, Your Honor, the
I'm not talking about the actual evidence of the offenses.
You're talking about the Operation Restore Vigilance.
Yeah.
That was found by the CCA to be erroneous under 403. At the trial level, the military judge, again, identified that some issues with it and specifically limited the members to what they can consider that for, and it was only relatable to one specification regarding one of the victims after the plan had come in, and they used that to show, I guess, knowledge or intent of his wrongdoing. Furthermore, the only other items that appellant alleges as being erroneous or now amounting to UCI in the context of the heritage brief is the Colonel Bauer's testimony. However, here, as Judge Olson pointed out, the military judge gave a very specific limiting instruction on how they could use that. And it should be noted that the military judge, sua sponte, interrupted the colonel and then instructed. There was no defense objection, and indeed, there was no attempt to cross-examine him.
Counsel, jumping ahead a little bit, in terms of the relief that was provided by the CCA, do you agree with the characterization that was not tied at all to UCI?
The court didn't specifically say UCI. They identified it with the testimony, which appellant alleges is UCI, so it was arising from the same facts, Your Honor. However, again, as this court had done in other cases, where such testimony has been found or alleged to be problematic, they just reassessed they found error under RCM 1001B, and then reassessed their sentence as part of their decreal paragraph.
So is it your position then that if we were to decide that there was some form of unlawful command influence, that the accused in this case has already received appropriate relief?
Yes, Your Honor, and as this court said yesterday in Voice, in footnote 5, you know, if there's the unlawful influence was later cured, it's a significant factor that should be considered by the court.
So you're saying the fact that the CCA said this information should not have come in, here's the fix for that, that even though they were not citing UCI, it still should be essentially accredited to the UCI issue?
Yes, Your Honor, because what the appellant alleges to UCI is the same exact facts that which the court found erroneous and then excised when they reassessed their sentence, as well as with the other items that were found.
Well, counsel, would you agree that the court below rejected the command influence argument? It says the argument is without merit.
Yes, Your Honor. So
what you're saying is it's exact same evidence. They kicked it out under a different rule. They didn't need to reach whether it was command influence.
Now, even under the apparent UCI analysis, even if the burden was shifted, no disinterested observer fully informed of the facts and circumstances here would harbor a significant doubt about the fairness of the proceedings.
Oh, come on. You've got McCutcheon in there saying, hammer him. You've got the colonel saying, hammer him. And then you've got the white letters floating around. Can the government really assert that with a straight face?
Yes, Your Honor. There's no evidence in the record.
Please tell me how.
Yes, there's one. First, with regard to the white letters, although attached at the CCA, there's no evidence that the members read them. There's no evidence of the heritage brief. Looking at these.
So in the Marine Corps, the pointy head of the spear, nobody reads what the commandant says.
Well, there's no evidence in the record here, Your Honor.
There's no evidence. What does there need to be, or is it enough to show that this was widely disseminated to the category of people who sat on the court martial?
Well, Your Honor, there would have to be
I'm asking.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah, I mean, is it enough to show that the commandant thought this was really important, and he sent it out and said, I want every staff, NCO, and officer in the Marine Corps to read this. And then, well, maybe a certain number of them just blew him off. But is it enough to show that it was widely disseminated with the intent that this class of people would read it and act in act in accordance there with it?
No, Your Honor.
Or do you have to, or does the appellant have to show actual knowledge?
Well, the appellant has to show that the members were exposed to it.
Yeah.
And here, the white letters were in the Heritage Reaper in 2012. The appellant's trial was in 2014. The appellant never objected. He had the opportunity to challenge or inquire into this on voir dire. He did not. He had a chance to request a duvet afterwards. He did not. And nor does he allege that his trial defense counsel were ineffective for failing to do so. Additionally, there were corrective measures taken. At the trial level, we saw the testimony and being limited by the military judge. We had, as Judge Cox pointed out, it was actually in the record, neither my friend or I put this in the joint appendix, unfortunately, but if you look at the record at 180, the SecDef's memorandum was in the members' folders. The judge asked the members to read that and then acknowledge that they could follow the instruction to not be influenced by outside factors. Also, looking at the reasonable disinterested observer, fully informed facts, the appellant was acquitted of one of his offenses. And then any prejudice from Major McCutcheon's testimony, again, which was not objected to at all below, was eliminated by the sentence reassessment, where the CCA reduced the appellant's confinement time from 10 years to 5 years. So no disinterested observer, fully informed of facts, would harbor a significant
Counsel, would you agree that at the initial voir dire, that the military judge, and you might not, and I understand that, that the military judge had a sua sponte duty to inquire into the knowledge of the remaining members once the first member indicated that he had been exposed to this briefing? Wouldn't the military judge have a duty then to investigate whether other members had been so exposed to obviate any potential unlawful influence claim that might arise?
No, Your Honor, I don't believe he'd have the duty to inquire. However, here he gave a prophylactic measure up front by including that SecDef memo in the members' folders.
I understand that, but maybe I'm mistaken about the record, but he didn't go into any inquiry with any of the members, right?
No, Your Honor, he did not.
And I'm asking you whether he had a duty to do that. I guess your position is that he did not.
No, Your Honor, with regard to the Lieutenant Colonel, there was a reason to inquire because he said he'd felt pressured on a previous court-martial, and that's what led to him being removed from the case. However, there would be no reason to inquire to any other members.
But, I mean, if some of the issue is that all the Marines or most were exposed to this, or at least had knowledge of it, wouldn't the military judge, who is himself a Marine, wouldn't he want to inquire to see if anyone else was influenced or potentially influenced or had an opinion about it or anything like that?
Well, he did ask if the members could follow the instructions.
Well, that's not the same. Well, but that's not quite the same, I think. Would you not agree? That's not the same as asking the members, hey, look, this issue concerning the Commandant of the Marine Corps and his lecture or briefing has arisen.
No, Your Honor, in light of the facts here where the Heritage Brief was given in 2012 and the appellant's trial was not until approximately 2 years later in 2014.
Well, you think the Marines, I was a Marine. I don't know if my memory is that bad. I mean, I don't know if I'd forget over 2 years what the Commandant of the Marine Corps said 2 years before. You're not saying that, are you?
Your Honor, there was no duty to inquire into those things.
All right.
Has shown that they're not cited in a duty on behalf of the military.
Well, which way does that cut? It had it happened 2 years later, so everybody forgot about it, or it happened 2 years later, so it had soaked in.
Well, it happened 2 years before, Your Honor. It had been the subject of pervasive litigation at the lower courts, including the CCA, and the appellant made the conscious decision not to. Raise that, and in light of the letter in the members' folders, I think helps explain why no one delved into that.
Well, the Commandant himself issued a white letter that kind of peeled back from his heritage to it, didn't he?
I believe
white letter number three.
White letter number three, yes, Your Honor. Which is unfortunately not in the record. Unless there are any further questions, I'll briefly conclude.
Please do.
He also shows some evidence of apparent UCI. He offers only speculation. Further, no objective, disinterested, fully informed member of the public would harbor any doubt about the fairness of the proceedings. Wherefore, the United States respectfully requests this court affirm the findings and sentence below. Thank you.
Thank you. Rebuttal?
I'd like to reemphasize the granted issue in this case, and it deals with whether the NMCC erred in failing to find some evidence of unlawful command influence. We believe that the evidence in this case certainly has met the some evidence threshold, and because we have met that threshold, the burden now shifts to the government to disprove the impact of UCI on the court martial. Sentencing relief is not a fair trial make. While the lower court might have given relief Chief Staff Sergeant Chickaka based on evidentiary issues, they've reviewed his case through the wrong lens. It needs proper UCI analysis. The only appropriate remedy here, Your Honor, is for a set-aside. A Dubé hearing will not serve the means of justice here because of the constraints of MRE 606B. A Dubé judge would not be able to discuss with the members what their thoughts were at the time of the deliberation, only what was talked about in the deliberation room. A Dubé judge will not be able to get to the bottom of this. The only way to ensure that Staff Sergeant Chickaka receives a fair trial is to give them a new trial. Without any further questions, that concludes my argument.
The court thanks counsel for both parties. The case is now submitted. The court will be in recess until 11:30 tomorrow, when we will convene in a special session.
All rise. Court stands in recess until 11:30 tomorrow.